Good evening, everybody. This is Annie Chapetta. Welcome to the Behind Our Eyes book launch for August 7th, 2024 with author Leonard Tuchiner. Take it away, fellows.
Hello, this is Brad Torello. I'll be interviewing Leonard for this book launch. But first, his lovely wife, Diane, is going to read a synopsis of the novel that we are going to be discussing shortly. Take it away, Diane.
Okay. First, we go to Gazion, a gaseous planet far from Earth, but whose bubble-like intelligent inhabitants are working to contact other planets and civilizations. They have no permanent edifices, yet they live and work in ways not unlike our own. There are births, deaths, marriages, divorces, sports, restaurants, and institutions of higher education and research. There are also personalities of every stripe and problems similar to ours here on Earth, including drug addiction and its disastrous effects. The Gazion characters have marvelous names that always reflect something of their essence. Strong Presence, Dr. Mindstorm, Harmony Lights, and Dark Lights are just a few of the most prominent beings involved in the Other Worlds Contact project. Now we go to Earth, rural Missouri in the 1920s. The boy Ezekiel Isaacs, or Zeke, is contacted in a subtle and mysterious way by Strong Presence, who has been sent to attempt to bond with him. Strong is tenuously anchored to his homeworld by what they call the silver cord. From that moment on, the formerly ordinary child, Zeke, is overtaken by a desire to, quote, learn everything. In the military, later, he becomes a doctor. He marries the beautiful Lila, and they have two daughters. In the story that follows, the lives of the scientists on Gazion are roiled by frustration and fear that they can never get Strong Presence back. Is he, in fact, hopelessly, permanently tied to Zeke? In addition, serious personal problems beset many of the Gazions. On Earth, people age much faster than the Gazions do. And at last, Dr. Isaacs is an old man with dementia and a wife with her own mental problems. The most pressing question for the Gazion scientists is this: what will happen to Strong Presence if Zeke dies before they can be uncoupled? We find the answer in an ending of immense beauty, tenderness, and hope. That's all.
Okay. I hadn't actually seen the synopsis. It's very good. All right, Leonard. Well, this is our third book launch together, but you've actually written four books. Mm-hmm. One's a collection of poetry. One is a novel about racism in the late 60s, early 70s that features a talking turtle. The next one is a fanciful collection of stories and poems with supernatural and like scary story themes. And now we have Zeke, which clearly from the reading of the synopsis is a fairly deep and complex sci-fi novel. My first question would be, how do you pick a writing topic for each book? In other words, you've done these four. What causes you to say, okay, I'm going to write this one now?
Well, as you can see, I can write about anything really, almost. And I never know what's going to trick my fancy before I start. But I take things like what's going on in my life. How does it affect me? What maybe my dreams give me some ideas. I just don't know exactly where my ideas are going to come from. And I don't pre-plan too much of it. Whatever hits my fancy at the moment is what I'm going to go with.
You don't use an outline, I believe you said, right?
Right. I don't use an outline at all. I do have sort of an idea when I start where this thing is going to go or what the themes will be, but I never know how it's going to turn out or what people are going to be involved in it, how many more characters I'll have to add as I go along. That kind of dictates itself. The characters keep talking and keep doing their thing, and I keep writing about them, but they tell a story. I'm not really part of it. Well, yeah, I am part of it. Sometimes I'm actually one form or another myself, but I'm not in charge of what happens with the story.
Okay. Well, I mean, one thing that's quite clear to people who are familiar with your work is, and this is a great skill for a writer to have, you have an amazing imagination, and that can go a long way in writing. My second question, so you've created this world of gaseous beings living in the atmosphere of a gas giant planet, I would say similar to Jupiter, and you create a very consistent explanation of how everything works. You've kind of, as they say in speculative fiction, you've sub-created a world. What, and some of this stuff is fairly scientific, or it certainly gives that impression. What is your background in science, or do you have one?
Well, I haven't really had a formal education in science. I took comparative anatomy, which I dropped because I learned I was blind, or going blind, couldn't read anything in the scopes, and I couldn't see where the one muscle group began and the other didn't, and I just thought I was stupid. But no, I was just going blind. So it's okay. But I've done an awful lot of reading. I started off reading mostly animal books, and I've also written a lot about animals. But I also read an awful lot of science fiction, and you can really learn a lot about science in certain kinds of science fiction. I mean, that seems strange, but it happens to be true. And many scientists who have studied science fiction did it because of the fiction that they read or the pictures that they saw. So, and then I've always been interested in science in itself. And today, in Braille edition, which comes out bi-monthly, it's Science News, and it's a magazine that will give you more articles about everything that's going on in science and tell you the science behind it and so forth. And so I always have access, and I'm always reading it. And as I've grown, and that's where my science comes from. It's completely
excellent. Excellent. You know, kind of self-taught, and it is true that one can learn a lot from reading certain types of science fiction, which segues beautiful into my third question here. When I first started reading this, I viewed this pretty much as going to be a piece that would fit into the genre of hard science fiction. Hard science fiction basically means that the describing of a speculative form of science that you do very accurately and consistently is kind of the main purpose of the story. But as I read further, I found that it was about much more than that. And what I found was that it really had to do, it ultimately moved past that and into the personal lives of Gaseans and humans and so on and so forth. What caused you to move it in that direction as opposed to continuing with the hard sci-fi, which was very consistent and well done.
Well, I kind of cheated on this because I already had the story, and this is one way that I get stories, that was happening in my life. And this happened to do with my my in-laws, two wonderful people. He was a doctor, and he was his wife, a nurse. And they both got Alzheimer's at the same time. And I thought there was more to the story than just he got, you know, they got ill and they died and so forth. So I had a, how would you do this? And the idea that, well, science fiction was one way to do it. And in order to do this, I had to decide what kind of world was I going to work it in. And the Gaysian idea came to me. And then I had to create a world that was consistent with gaseous living, where you have very few minerals and very little liquid, but you have lots and lots of gas. And so the beings had to have that kind of a body. And they, what would their skills be? Well, they wouldn't be able to tell what was going on outside their world because they couldn't see that far. They had too much gas above them. And they didn't even know anything about the core of their land, their world. But they were beginning to learn, but it was all theoretical. And so I had to just keep working this thing. And I created these beings. And then I had to create relationships between them. And I had to set up the conditions under which these beings would be in contact somehow with Zeke or with a humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
They did that, and then they had contact, and I'll drop it at that point.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, which brings to mind, you taught an excellent class for our organization Behind Our Eyes, writing for Healing and Growth, and you, one of the things that you spoke about, and I can see it in this story, is the relationship between mind and brain. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you think about mind and brain, even beyond the confines of your story? What's the difference? Where do they intersect and so on?
Well, first let me say how it does work in the story.
Okay, great.
They're the one science that they have been brought up on, that their conditions permitted, was the science of mind, that is, or brain, that is, and you go to a place like Star Trek to get some of these ideas, and you get into the idea of mind melding, and telepathy, and variations of that. Everything that happens in Gaysian stems from that ability of all the entities to communicate internally or externally by a transmission of thoughts. Even their relatively dumb entities, that what makes up their buildings, they're not solid. They have to keep on moving. But anyway, they also just use mind to do that. So the difference between mind and brain, and this is more than a theory. It's actually, well, it's a theory. It's a working theory in science. It's not the main one. There's still a lot of controversy about it, and I guess there will be for a long time. But if you were an entity or an aborigine walking in an aborigine's environment, and you happen to see a radio lying on the ground and it was playing something, and you just watch that, you would be amazed. And you would think all that music, all that sounds, all those human being type sounds were coming from the radio, that the radio was the source of those those sounds. But obviously, we know that the radio is not the source. It's merely a transceiver. You know, it takes certain energy pulses and converts them into other frequencies and then amplifies them so that we can be aware of it. And that's basically what the brain does. But the brain can only do that with which it is in attune to begin with. Now, mind has no bounds. There are no limitations in it. So the mind, so when the brain dies, and we know what happens when the brain dies. We know this from operation theaters in neuroscience and in heart, where the brain or the heart has died completely, and there's no signs of life from the brain or a little sick with brain from the brain, and with that, all the senses, all the other life signs are offline. You can't do anything without the brain working. And some of these people then have been somehow resuscitated, maybe very shortly, for a very short period of time, or maybe, you know, for a long time. But in that resuscitation, they sometimes can tell you everything that went on during their operation, during the failure, not only what was going on in the room, but what was going on in the rooms next to them. Now, there's no way of explaining this in our known science, except now that we have quantum physics, of course, there is a way. But the answer that is consistent with that is that there is something that's connected to the mind that the mind's attuned to, which the brain is attuned to, which is mind. And it leaves a lot of hope to what happens to us after we die, because we know then the mind is going to continue to exist, at least theoretically. So
that's absolutely fascinating. And it's, that was a very clear, at least I think, a very clear explanation. So the mind is this vast thing, and it manifests through the brain, and the mouth is the speaker.
Right.
Excellent. I like it. All right. Yeah. So we're kind of halfway through things, and Diane read the synopsis, and we've been talking about stuff. What do you see as the market for this book? As I said, this is the biggest market in books today is romance. And believe it or not, there is some of that in here. But who do you see as people who would buy and read this book?
Well, anybody interested in science fiction, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say it's not limited to in youth. I would any book, because it could be read at various levels, but I would suspect that young adults, teenagers would be included in that. And you go all mm-hmm. the way up to the end of life. Anybody who has an interest in expanding their consciousness, anything, they'll usually be interested in reading about such things, and it will help them to do that. And they're automatically drawn to these types of issues, and they see a science as a science fiction as a way of expanding our thoughts and increasing our idea pool. And just about anybody, people who are interested in just relationships. If this is anything, this is about relationships. Even more than the science. The science is only the conditions under which these relationships take place. And they're interesting in that they're different, but they're also
right.
Yeah. They're also,
obviously you use the science to create the world, to create the beings, to tell the story,
right?
Which, does make it kind of, it might seem on the surface to some people that it really is just a sci-fi book for sci-fi people, but I mean, I think what you're saying is on target in the sense that it really is all about relationships. That's where it goes.
Right.
And so, all right, very good. Let's see. So in the synopsis, this was mentioned, I think this was mentioned in the synopsis, about how similar they are to us. And one thing that we saw was that Gaysians, like humans, also are subject to mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main characters, one of the protagonists of this story, Mindstorm, has this incredibly vivid breakdown that you describe. He thought he was in hell and all sorts of things. Can you talk a little bit about, mental health issues in Gaysians and specifically Mindstorm's breakdown?
Yeah, one thing I should say about my background is I've been a therapist. I started off as a rehab counselor, but ended up just being a plain therapist. And I've always majored in psychology, and that's one of my professional interests. So I had some basis for doing this. Mindstorm he was the leader of the Other Worlds projects, to make contact. He originated the idea. He was absolutely a brilliant Gaysian. Probably one of the most brilliant minds on Gaysian.
And a scientist. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
So he prided himself as being smarter, the smartest kid in the block, which he was. And as a result of that, he did what a lot of us do. He put all his energy into his profession and into his accomplishments. And he was married to somebody I can't remember her name right now, but she was very beautiful as a Gaysian, looked like a bubble. They all did. She was pregnant with a child. And she was feeling very neglected, which sounds very familiar, I guess. And as a result of that, she would go out at night and imbibe with became addicted to a certain kind of gases.
Xenon, I believe.
Yeah, xenon, right. And
xenon's.
Don't get hooked on xenon. You'll never have a good child. Anyway, when she gave birth, it was obvious to Mindstorm that the child was going to be, well, retarded and wouldn't have that long a life. And he, at that point, almost had a breakdown. And then he forced her out of the house. And the result of that, no good happens. And then he suddenly becomes aware of all that he has done and how negligent he was, and he can't face it. So he has a total breakdown. I'd call it a schizophrenic breakdown, except we know why this happened. And he thought he was in hell, and he thought he was the devil, and he just went berserk. They had to restrain him, and they weren't making any progress with his recovery. And so they called on one of their great psychiatrists, who was his name was Mindbender, and Mindbender first tried ordinary procedures like we'd understand what those procedures would be. And then he had to keep going to the extremes, and he had to then take great chances that might be questionable, but they really need this guy to do the project he was on, because lives were depending on it. And so he was very tough on Mindstorm, made him face the things that had happened to him and so forth. And eventually Mindstorm did come around. He did get better, became actually better than he was, but that's an interesting thing as to what happened when he was. I'll leave it at that.
So, okay, yeah. I've got to ask, is Mindstorm, you know, in a sense, it's the stereotypical scientist who's focused on, you know, like you said before, on his profession and, you know, puts feelings in the background. Is he based on, like, any real character that you've met or any person that you know?
Yeah, me, one for one. I've always been sort of that way, but not always. I mean, the last 20 years, I've been a lot better.
I was going to say, it doesn't show. You seem like, you know, a guy who's real comfortable with writing about and expressing emotion.
Yeah, well, go back 40 years and you'll see a different picture. Alexa, I shouldn't have said the name, but she started giving me a weather report anyway, spontaneously. So anyway, where was I?
You were saying it was that you based Mindstorm on yourself.
Yeah, but there are always people in my life that were like that. I mean, I had a lot of clients, and some of them were exactly like that, and a lot of other kinds of mental disorders that we could point to that were sort of like what Mindstorm had.
He come, you know, for a gas being, and I don't know if this is a compliment, but for a gas being, he comes off very human.
Right. They all do, actually, because their thinking processes are very similar to humans, although they do with totally different organs.
Which is very fortunate for the story.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Another character who I thought was fascinating was the character of Lila. And I mean, I'm going to put this very simply because I kept going back and forth. Are you supposed to like her, or are you supposed to like not like her? What were you doing with Lila? Very interesting creation.
Well, like in all stories, you've got to have a bad guy. And Lila did have that characteristic, or she was capable of it. But when she was young, none of that showed. She was beautiful. She was vivacious. She was a perfect doctor's wife. But when Zeke began to deteriorate, she did too, from the same ailment of Alzheimer's. And so I needed her to be the bad guy, but I also needed her to be the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had to be one of the main drives in the things that Zeke did, what happened to him, and what Strong Presence were about. And this had to be a story about love. Now, she was my mother-in-law, but I gave her short thrift, actually, in order to get that evilness there. But it was really just her mind deteriorating. And we deal with that. And how we deal with it, you have to read the book.
Right, yeah. We don't want to... And that was, which goes into my second to last question here. You know, what would you say that the main takeaway or the the moral of the story or the main takeaway from this novel, what would you say that is without giving up, you know, without any spoilers?
Love conquers all. That's it.
Love
conquers all.
Okay. Yeah, I can. Okay. You know, it's interesting because people would start reading this book and they'd be reading about these gas beings and their membranes and how all the things that they utilize are more primitive beings that are similar to them. I don't think anyone would guess that love conquers all is the ultimate theme of this story.
Well, I probably didn't know it while I was writing it.
Touché. Okay. Yep. You said before. You don't. Yeah. Okay.
And by the way, theirs is not the only love story. There's the love between the human Zeke and the Gazian.
And harmony and strong presence too.
Right, and harmony and strong presence, very important.
And bright spots crush on dark lights.
Right. We don't know what's going to happen. The story goes beyond that point.
Yes.
And Mindstorm's relationship to his whole crew, you know, to the people he's involved with, he has to keep up his original presence because he's unconquerable. Yeah. And so he has a very intricate relationship with all the other Gazians. So anyway, yeah.
Okay, love conquers all. My last question before we also ask where people can get your books. My last question is, so, you know, I kind of enumerated what the types of books you've written already. I've got to ask, after reading this, I just have to ask, what comes next?
Well, I'm not even sure there will be a next, although I think there probably will be. I've got such a backlog of stories that I could write a story about animals and talking animals and realistic animals and animals I've actually had as pets. I mean, I've had about 12 dogs and about the same amount of cats. And that seems to be, I've started collecting stories and trying to decide for sure whether I want to do this or not. But I probably will, but I'm going to need some break in between books.
Oh, yeah, this is a lengthy book, and, you know, as was your other novel. I'm hoping for a Sterling the Cat story. Just people love cat stories. Cat people love them, so might be a way to go.
Yeah, I already wrote a lot about Sterling.
Okay, good. Don't forget about that. So where can people get your books?
Okay. This is the website.
This is my website, which Dvorkin provides for me, which is one place that you can get my books. So the website is?
https://www.dldbooks.com/Tuchner. That's TUCHYNER/.
And if anybody wants it, just ask me, just get in touch with me and I'll send it to you. It's actually part of what is on my byline or whatever you call it at the bottom
Amazon. At this point, is it available in any other form but print?
Yeah, in fact, I was going to say that you can also go directly to Amazon and you'll find my books there, all four of them. And through Amazon, you can get them in electronic form.
Kindle.
Excellent. Good.
And also
hardback and paperback.
You had hardback and paperback, but also what's that other?
Smashwords, like ebooks.
Smashwords, yeah, that's it.
Okay, so good. It's out there. It's accessible. You know, again, I would say your people read this book. It's excellent. All right, thank you, Leonard. It's been a pleasure to discuss this book. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And hopefully, I get to ask the questions about it. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. And I guess we open up the questions from the audience now.
Yes, this is Annie. We have an intimate number of people here, and we all pretty much know each other. So I don't think we need to raise hands. So if you can just say your name and wait until you know you're not stepping on somebody else to ask your question, I think that'll work the best. So we're not raising hands and lowering hands, and we get extra time. Maybe ask a couple of extra since that other stuff takes time. So who would like to be first?
Well, since my name begins with A, I'll go first.
All right, Alice.
This is Alice, and all of your characters have names that either have meaning or seem to have a connection with you. And I'm wondering if there is a connection in any way, why you chose the name Waynesboro for the place in Virginia.
Very good. That's where my in-laws settled down as a radiologist in a hospital in Waynesboro.
Oh.
And that's where I first learned about them.
Well, that's a nice tribute then to your in-laws. So thank you, Leonard, for letting me know that, because that I thought there must be a connection there someplace. And the pet, which isn't a dog, that was a clever part too. There were, as Brad said, all the imagination that you show and grow in this book is quite remarkable. So I'll let someone else ask a question now.
Anyone else?
Okay, this is Sally. Normally, I don't read science fiction, but I will read anything Leonard writes. I've been in his critique group for many years. When I read this book, I read it in two sittings, and I came away from it thinking, maybe I should read more science fiction. But I realized, as Brad and Leonard were talking, what I really liked about it and what I brought away from it was this was about relationships and emotions and love. And you don't have to like science fiction to read this book. I think anybody would enjoy it. Another book well done, Leonard.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sally.
Anyone else?
Well, this is Carol, and I don't read science fiction either. But I guess I'm going to make an exception in this case, Leonard. So I'll be reading it, and I'll give you my opinion later. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. In the form, you can get it very cheaply compared to, you know, getting it in the hard book, getting it in a soft book cover or even a hard one.
Hi, this is Lisa. I haven't read the book yet, but I have a couple questions. It seems like the people on the other planet are a lot like people on Earth. Are there any personality differences or any emotional differences between the two?
Well, the fact that they communicate with sound too, but they communicate mostly with telepathy with their minds, and they emotionally they're very similar. You're asking for the differences. It's funny, I never even thought about what the differences would be. I mean, living in a globoid body they have pseudopods that they extend for manipulation of items and things like that. And they don't, you know, they imbibe with their food, which are gases, which have certain elements in them as well. But basically, they are human, I would say. Yeah. But when in the book, when Zeke is introduced to the reality of this Gaysian world, he is absolutely petrified and frightened and finds it totally alien. I should tell you that too. So even though they think much alike, it takes a while to get used to one or the other. And in fact, well, I don't want to say too much about it, but the Gaysians also had the same reaction to humans. You can imagine that humans are made of solids, water, and gas. And the Gaysians, you know, that's what humans are made of. Okay? Gaysians are made out of gas, films, and the tiny trace elements that have to be floating around in the gases with them. So you'd think there'd be a lot of differences.
Well, it was mentioned that Mindstorm thought he was in hell. So do they have a religion that hell is a part of, or is hell just sort of a synonym for a terrible place?
Well, since hell would be part of a religion or just part of an idea, and the Gaysians had that idea and what hell, where hell was, what hell did, and it'd be possible that maybe they did think it was a place in the afterlife, but I don't know that they all had this belief. I doubt that whether Mindstorm actually had this religious belief that plagued him so much in his schizophrenia. But, you know, that was a very strong image. And so you'd have to wonder just what part religion did play in their lives. But go ahead.
If I could just jump in here, it almost seemed like hell was more of like a philosophical concept where everything is really bad.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, can't say much more about that. Yeah. Thanks for the question. That makes me think.
So Leonard, this is Annie. So do you believe that Gaysians could really exist?
They're not a kind of life form that we can clearly see how they could exist. But I think if love conquers all, I think life conquers all as well. Mm-hmm. And if it's possible that life can evolve from just straight gases or anything, then I think it's possible that they could exist. But it is purely speculative since we don't have... Well, we have some ideas where this is possible. We have what we call extremopods or extreme, it's like viruses and things that exist in extreme conditions on Earth,
right.
Like, you know, like the Antarctic or in the hot soups of geysers and places where, you know, you don't think anything could exist. And all life actually boils down to very small pieces of it coming together and creating colonies of cells. And I think it's possible, but I couldn't swear by it.
Thank you. Anyone else? We're about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. I guess if there are no other questions, we can close out the meeting. Marilyn, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm Marilyn Smith, president of Behind Our Eyes, and we're so glad to have everyone here who's in attendance. Also, we want to welcome those who will be learning about Leonard's newest book on our book launch page on our website. Brad and Leonard are the right ones to bring our attention to and curiosity to the issue of what might be another world and who lives in it because of their study of speculative and science fiction and familiarity with it. A lot of us don't have that much. We have many genres represented in the Behind Our Eyes community, and there's just about something for everyone, a chance to do a book launch like this, or perhaps there's a literature you're working on, poetry, whatever, that doesn't quite come through yet and you want a little critique, we have that on our list, our email list. And whether you know someone who's a writer with disability or you are someone yourself who might be interested, go to our Behind Our Eyes website, behindoureyes.org, and check out our About Us information. There's a membership form, no dues, and check out our other pages. There's a special events page and much, much more. Oh, and by the way, you also, whether you're a member or not, a writer with a disability has a chance to publish in our magazine, Magnets and Ladders. It comes out twice a year, and we have cases in there from all over the globe. It's primarily U.S., but we do reach out. This week, Behind Our Eyes has completed a board meeting and a reader's workshop already, just in the two or three days this week. And then on the 18th of this month, we have a speaker who will share how she shares her work with the rest of the world. So check out everything and be sure and watch for our next book launch. Keep on or start writing. Thanks.
Thanks, Marilyn. And thanks, Leonard and Brad and everybody who came today, tonight. So have a good evening. Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you.